is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I march to the sound of peace talks. The headline in Reuters promises lots of twists and turns, but it is generally understood as positive that Afghanistan is speaking with Pakistan. You will recall these last weeks have been reported ferocious firefights in the line between the two states in the northwest, including artillery exchanges and many casualties. I welcome my two good colleagues, Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and Hussein Haqqani, Senior Fellow for the Hudson Institute, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States. Gentlemen, Mr. Ambassador, I begin with you. Afghan-Pakistan peace talks enter third day as Trump, President Trump, again offers help. I understand they're meeting in Istanbul, perhaps to resolve the firefights of these last weeks, but there are larger issues. I believe one mentioned in the lengthy FT feature in these last hours is that Pakistan has ordered up to somewhere between 1 and 2 million Afghan natives to leave Pakistan, some of whom have been there since, I believe, the late 20th century. So there are more issues than just the firefight. What are your expectations for these so-called peace talks? Good evening to you, Mr. Ambassador.
Good evening. The peace talks essentially are an opportunity for Turkey to exercise influence over the Taliban and at the same time to impress Pakistan that it can bring about some understanding between Pakistan and the Taliban. But other than that, I do not expect much in terms of an outcome. Look, Pakistan right now is in one of those phases, and Pakistan has had those phases before, where it feels cocky, where it feels very sure of itself. Its leaders, its military leaders, think they've got everything under control. They've got the domestic situation under control. They have not been browbeaten by India easily. They see the Taliban and the Indians as working together now, and therefore they want essentially to show to the region that they are in charge. The Taliban are not going to accept that easily. And so whatever they agree will not necessarily result in longer-term peace. It might alleviate the situation right now. Pakistanis have an advantage because they control the flow of goods into Afghanistan. Afghanistan is landlocked, and Karachi in Pakistan is their main port of imports and exports. Not that they have much of. Their own agricultural products, fruit and vegetables, are essentially consumed in Pakistan. And the two countries have a porous border. The Pashtun ethnic group straddles the border, and there are tribes that are on both sides of the border, even families and clans. It's a long story going back to 1893 when the border was drawn under British rule. It was always meant to be a porous border and kept as a porous border. If Pakistan wants to make it a harder border, it's not going to be easy for either Pakistan's Pashtuns or the Afghans to accept that.
Bill, a very good evening to you. The Financial Times lengthy feature from Rawalpindi is of Field Marshal Asim Munir, who's the boss of the Pakistani military. What's important here is that the president, offering to help with the peace talks in Istanbul, has also said in recent past that Field Marshal Asim Munir is his favorite field marshal. What have you taken from this, Bill, given the 20 years you've been covering Pakistan's double game in Afghanistan?
Well, first of all, it's ironic that President Trump wants to solve the problem that he helped create, which was with his agreement with the Taliban. The Doha agreement caused gave the excuse for the Biden administration to withdraw, which caused the Taliban to take control of the country in August 2021. Then, of course, the Afghan Taliban has always supported the Pakistani Taliban, which reignited its insurgency, which has caused these problems. So President Trump's, he said that he can solve this quickly. I would just say to him, good luck with that. This is a problem that just isn't going to go away. We couldn't solve our problem in Afghanistan with over 100,000 troops quickly. I don't see how some negotiations are going to solve the dispute between the Afghan Taliban and the Pakistani state. As far as Trump's like of Munir, well, look, I'll only say that he won't be the first American politician or general or diplomat to be enticed by the Pakistani military leadership. He just, you know, he's not the first and he won't be the last. The Pakistanis have played this game masterfully. They allowed the United States to provide over $1 billion a year in aid to the Pakistanis, even as the Pakistanis supported the Afghan Taliban to kill American troops and sabotage our mission in Afghanistan. The Pakistani generals, they'll drink liquor and they'll give you a fine dinner and they dress well and they say all the right things, and Americans just easily snap it up and say, wow, they're just like us. These are people that we could work with, even as the Pakistani generals work to undermine us, to kill our own troops. So it's completely unsurprising. We're American political and military leadership has been gullible when it comes to Pakistan, but it's not limited to Pakistan. It happens across the world.
Mr. Ambassador, in detail in the Financial Times piece, which is a very long and complicated in motives, so I don't generalize, I just speak. I was struck by one remark that China's, the People's Republic of China's support for Pakistan, which has long been lavish, is flagging. Is that accurate? And what means do you measure flagging support?
Well, before that, I will try and answer the question that Bill very ably answered. I have a whole book on this subject. It's titled Magnificent Delusions. It's about how the U.S. and Pakistan have dealt with each other over the years and why the Pakistanis have had a bit of an advantage. Not everybody knows the history. Americans don't pay much attention to history, and they always think tomorrow is another day, whereas the Pakistanis have a process. In fact, there's a quote in that book from Pakistan's first ambassador to the United States that the Americans are very prone to flattery and like personal connections. And so we should use that as a strategy. And they've done that for years. But then when the chips are down, the Americans do realize that, oh, there are other considerations. And that's when the relationship goes south. As far as China's flagging interest, well, basically, the Chinese have not been putting more money into Pakistan over the last couple of years. They have not been increasing their investments, and they are not putting deposits in Pakistan's state bank to bolster Pakistan's foreign currency reserves. Pakistan has a perennial shortage of foreign currency because it imports far more than it exports. And its method of balancing the books is usually borrowing from China mainly, but China is not lending any new, giving any new loans. And also to ask friendly countries to put deposits with its central bank, which is unusual, but that helps them portray that they have more reserves than they actually do.
And Beijing's strategic interest, I believe they're building a port in Pakistan. Has that interest flagged by Beijing?
No, it hasn't. The Chinese will, in the end, prevail in Pakistan for the simple reason that what's happening in the United States is not sustainable. A president's personal whims and fancies cannot override the larger U.S. interest. And something will happen which will make the U.S. Stop saying the nice things it's saying. Moreover, while President Trump is saying all the right things about Field Marshal Munir and Pakistan's Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif and is meeting them, there is nothing the U.S. is getting right now from Pakistan, or for that matter, Pakistan getting from the U.S. Pakistan likes being liked, and so does President Trump.
Bill, is this complication with Munir, is this instead of relationships with India? India and Pakistan are the true giant enmities, enemies of each other in the area. Has that changed profoundly? Is the embrace of Munir meant to affect the Delhi relationship?
Well, first, John, I've given up on trying to figure out what goes on in Trump's mind when it comes to foreign policy. I guess one can argue that Trump is being Machiavellian and is using the relationship or ties with Pakistan to pressure India. But I'm not certain this is how things work with the Trump administration. He's very transactional, as we've discussed here. And he also likes to give the appearance of he loves to have that moment of peace. So he's trying to intervene here. But we have to remember that when it comes to Pakistan and India, that Pakistan's true enemy in the region is India. It's not the Taliban. The Taliban are merely wayward brothers who need to be redirected to fight the Indians. I really think that President Trump is making a mistake here. I think what he's doing is alienating the Indians, who should be the U.S.'s regional ally against Pakistan, who has proven to be an unreliable partner at best and a frenemy or enemy at worst, which is where I come down on this, given their support for the Taliban as we were trying to stabilize Afghanistan. And India can be a reliable partner, when it comes to countering China and other threats in the region. President Trump, he seems to like the strong men like Munir. He shook the hand of a specially designated global terrorist in Syria, Ahmed al-Shara. This is how Trump operates. It can be frustrating when dealing with this in our work in dealing in foreign policy circles.
Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for Defense of Democracy, keeping the Long War Journal for more than two decades. Hussein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. I'm John Batchelor.